I may need a little more water. So where are we in our series? Well, I have said that I view Christianity's view of wine in the Bible as a Scanlon error. A Scanlon error I have defined as giving a medal to the guilty party and convicting the innocent party. Fermented wine has been given divine approval when, in fact, as I see it, fermented wine is condemned in the Bible, and the wine approved by God is unfermented grape juice. And so I have made two propositions. Number one, unfermented grape juice was called wine in ancient times, and this is true in the Bible. Number two, fermented grape juice is also called wine in the Bible, and it is bad wine. It is condemned by God. The next task before us is to look at the words that have been translated wine in the Bible, and this will be hard work. For the next two messages, you will need to think very carefully with me, and I would be encouraged if some of you would study these things to check to see if the things I tell you are true. I believe that the translation of certain words has been part of the cause of creating Christianity's Scanlon error. There are three major words we must consider. I have not sought to be exhaustive in this series on words translated wine in the Bible. I thought you might get exhausted if I did that. But we're going to look at three words, and these are very key. And so I'm seeking to cover the major points of importance. Now, the three major words we will be considering are the Hebrew words tirosh, T-I-R-O-S-H, tirosh, and then shekar, S-H-E-K-E-R, shekar. And I have said that before that this matter of wine in the Bible, I think, can be settled in the Torah alone. The first five books of the Bible. You see, the psalmist prayed in Psalm 119, verse 18, "Open thou my eyes that I may behold wonderful things out of thy law." That word law is Torah, the first five books of the Bible. Have you ever seen wonderful, great and wonderful things in the first five books of the Bible? They're there. There are lots of them there. I think we can find all this information right there. Well, it is to the Torah we want to once more go. Deuteronomy chapter 14. If you open your Bibles to Deuteronomy chapter 14. And we will find the three major words that we're going to be looking at in this passage. The passage was read for us. And if you look at verse 23... Chapter 14, verse 23. Well, let me read verse 22. "You shall truly tithe all the increase of your grain, that the field produces year by year, and you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses to make his name abide, the tithe of your grain and your new wine and your oil and the firstborn of your herds and your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God." So we have the word wine mentioned first in verse 23. King James Version calls it simply wine. The New King James translates it as new wine. So we begin by taking a closer look at the original word here, and it's tirosh, or tirosh, T-I-R-O-S-H. And the word new wine in this verse, New King James Version, is this word tirosh. This word occurs 38 times, and in the King James Version is translated wine all 38 times. In defining this word tirosh, commentators say it means, this is what it means from its root, to get possession of, or it refers to something as being a possession, either one of those two. From this basic root meaning, many feel it speaks of fermented wine because it gets possession of one's mind. I see no evidence of such a connection at all. I am amazed at what some have accepted. So I see no evidence of such a connection at all. Many also connect this word to the vine or wine, the word tirosh, which has, as far as I can yet find, I may not have all the information, I find zero basis for it whatsoever. I think it has come about by a very biased view in the first place. It is my conclusion that this word tirosh never means wine. I know that is a tremendously bold statement. I believe it is correct, and I believe it cannot be disproved. Now, there may be information I'm missing. The Hebrew word for wine is yayin. Y-A-Y-I-N. Not tirosh. Never. Why then do translations translate tirosh as wine? I think the error was created in the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Hebrew Old Testament, done over 2,000 years ago. It translates tirosh as wine. As a matter of fact, there's one verse that has both words in it, tirosh and yayin. So what do they do? The Old King James then translates tirosh as new wine. All the rest of the time they say it's wine. Yeah, that is an inconsistency that I can't see how it could come about unless there is some information I cannot get at. Now look at verse 23. Here you have the word tirosh, translated wine in the King James Version, and new wine in the New King James. Then look at verse 26. Verse 26. And you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen or sheep, for wine or similar drink, for whatever your heart desires, and you shall eat there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your house. Next message, I'm going to cover this in greater detail. Now here we have another word translated wine, and it is yayin. It is not tirosh, but it is still translated wine. Now the New King James is inconsistent in its translation of tirosh. The King James Version always translates tirosh as wine, with one exception. Now I insist that you cannot have. Now listen, here's another proposition, and if you prove me wrong on this, I have to redo a lot of work for a good many years. I maintain that in one language, you do not have two words that mean exactly the same thing. I have done this in many Bible classes. I want you to find two words that mean exactly the same thing. They have come with many, many words. I have never yet found this to be wrong. You do not have two words in the same language that mean the same thing. The only time you do is when you import a word from another language. The only time. And then it is out of another language meaning the same thing. And so you cannot have tirosh mean wine and yayin mean wine too. It is not possible unless there is some distinction. So tirosh and yayin cannot both mean wine. Yayin without question means wine. So the question now is, if tirosh does not mean wine, what does it mean then? I told you this is hard work. You have to stay with me for two messages. These are important. You might write this down as another proposition. You see, if somebody shoots down a proposition I make here, they're very bold propositions. I have to go do a lot of homework. Here's the next proposition. The word tirosh means fruit. The word tirosh means fruit. It does not mean wine. It means fruit. I mean by fruit, fruit. You see, in English, our word fruit is a broad word. You can speak of the fruit of the land, the fruit of the ground, the fruit of the garden, the fruit of the womb, etc. It means generally the increase or produce of something. The common Hebrew word for that is peri. It's not anything else. It's peri. My dad used to go to the Okanagan Valley to buy fruit. Now, when we said he went to pick up fruit at the Okanagan Valley, we did not mean carrots. We did not mean hay either. We meant fruit. You know what I'm talking about? Fruit. So if he had gone to buy tirosh and it was the produce of the land, he could have went to buy hay or grain or potatoes and so on. But that's not what he went to get. He went to get fruit. That was like peaches and things like that, cherries and so on. Now, the Funk and Wagnalls College Dictionary gives several definitions for fruit. Then it says this: in popular usage, fruit is usually applied only to the fleshy, juicy, and more or less sweet products of plants and trees, including many that are seedless, but not to the other fleshy, juicy products, as the cucumber and tomato, which are technically fruits, but are called vegetables. Now, you know, tomatoes, there has been a long debate. Are tomatoes, are they fruit or are they vegetables? Well, they're usually classed as vegetables. Now, there are about a dozen other Hebrew words translated fruit in the Old Testament. None of these refers to fruit as I'm talking about this morning. I believe that tirosh is the Hebrew word that speaks of these sweet fruits generally. So is there evidence that this word mean or may mean fruit? Let me read from McClintock and Strong. As to the exclusively liquid character of the substance denoted, both yayin and tirosh are occasionally connected with expressions that would properly apply to a fruit. They are on occasion. It really actually means fruit on occasion. William Patton quotes a commentary called The Bible Commentary like this: tirosh is not wine at all, but the fruit of the vineyard in its natural condition. So this commentary agrees that tirosh means fruit, but it says it's from the vine, and I find no evidence for that whatsoever. But it calls it fruit. I give you one more quote from Patton, a learned biblical scholar, in a volume on the wine question published in London in 1841, holds that tirosh is not wine but fruit. So, well, let me read that again. I didn't read that right. A learned biblical scholar, in a volume on the wine question published in London, 1841, holds that tirosh is not wine but fruit. Yeah? So there we have some evidence from others that my proposition may be valid. Personally, I have no question in my mind that tirosh means fruit. Now let me take you to the very first occurrence of the word tirosh, Genesis chapter 27, right? Still in the Torah. Well, the Torah covers about 2,500 years, the first 2,500 years of history. 27 through 29. You will recall the story how Isaac and his mother tricked Jacob into blessing Isaac instead of Esau. And in this passage we have this account, so let's read it, verses 27 through 29. And he came near and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of the clothing and blessed him and said, surely the smell of my son is like the smell of a field which the Lord has blessed. Therefore may God give you of the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and wine. Let peoples serve you and nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren and let your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those that bless you. In verse 28, Jacob says, therefore, may God give you of the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and wine. And there you have a translation that is partly guilty in creating Christianity's scanon error. So let's look a little more closely. The King James Version says plenty of corn and wine. And this phrase, corn and wine, worth jotting down, occurs 10 times in the Old Testament. From the Torah to the Minor Prophets. And the same Hebrew words are used all 10 times. Now the word corn, King James Version, or grain, New King James Version, is a broad term referring to cereal grains, not just corn. Cereal grain. Corn doesn't mean corn. Old King James Version, corn, does not mean corn. It means grain. The Hebrew word here is dagan, D-A-G-A-N, which means grain. You will remember the god of the Philistines called Dagon. Do you remember him? Fell down when the god of Israel came too close, broke his head and so on. He was the god of grain, the god of Dagon. Dagon. The word for wine in each of these 10 passages is tirosh. Now the word Dagon is a broad term referring to various kinds of grains. If that is so, then how do we have a narrow term? May God bless you with grain and wine, which just comes from grapes. Broad term, narrow term. How this? In the how do we have these in the same phrase? The answer is we don't. They are both broad terms. Israel was a land of grain and fruit, not corn and wine. Grain and fruit, not corn and wine, as we would understand. You see how a translation has led to the Scanlon error. Here we have at least 38 occurrences of the word wine in the Bible that should simply read fruit. Now, Patton's admission, when he says, this doubtless may be its meaning in some passages, is an encouraging admission, allowing some credibility to this view. But contrary to Patton's conclusion, I think one could and should consistently translate this word, tirosh, as fruit in every passage. You know, it would already go a long way in clearing up this particular error. So it may refer either to fruit in general or the fresh juice made from such fruit. But let's consider Patton's objection to this view. He writes, this doubtless may be its meaning in some passages, that is, that it refers to fruit, but in others it can only mean wine, as, for example, Proverbs 3:10, thy presses shall burst out with new wine, tirosh. Isaiah, Roman numeral 62, verse 8, the sons of the stranger shall not drink thy new wine. But you know, contrary to Patton's conclusion, I think one could consistently translate this word tirosh as fruit in every passage, even those. I believe that the word tirosh always means fruit or fruit juice. It may refer either to sweet fruits in general or fresh juice made from such fruit. So Patton believes in Proverbs 3:10 it could not mean fruit. But listen, what is wrong with this translation? So your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with fruit. What's wrong with that? They didn't make only wine in vats. They made all kinds of juice in vats. What's wrong with saying the vats were overflow with fruit? Before they tread them, they put the fruit in. So we will see later that they made far more juice than just grape juice. By the way, this passage is just very crucial. This passage and the next. I know it may be a little hard to stick with it, but it is important. So what is wrong with this translation in Isaiah 62 verse 8? Surely I will no longer give your grain to be food for your enemies, and the sons of the foreigner shall not drink your fruit. Can you drink fruit? Well, that which is made from it. That's done all the time with words, that which it stands for. So the Hebrews made drinks from far more fruits than just grapes, as we will see later. By the way, the next word we're going to study, the two words we're going to study, verb and noun, are the most crucial in this matter. The most crucial, as I see it. Now let me point out a Scanlon error on this word. The New International Standard Bible Encyclopedia, volume 3. Now you can't get much higher in scholarship, even though somewhat liberal. You can't get much higher in scholarship than the New International Standard Bible Encyclopedia. It says the Authorized Version and the Revised Standard Version render Hebrew tirosh, simply wine or by new wine. Both yayin and tirosh are fermented grape juice with alcoholic content, hence both are able to create intoxication. There is zero evidence for that. I don't know what I'm missing. Zero evidence, and that's a statement out of this. Hosea 4:11, the only passage where tirosh may be looked at as negatively, and I don't think it is used to prove this point. All the rest are positive. It is poor scholarship. In my understanding, I think it's just simply because they viewed the evidence so plain that it wasn't worth studying. So they give Hosea 4:11 as proof for what they have said. The facts are Hosea 4:11 is the only reference in all the Bible to a possible negative reading of tirosh. Always positive. Easton's Bible Dictionary, too, falls into this error when it says of this word that it is properly must. Now, must is fresh grape juice. Must is not fermented. It is fresh grape juice. So it is must as fresh grape juice that is not fermented. And then he says this Hebrew word has been traced to a root meaning to take possession of, and hence it is supposed that tirosh is so designated because in intoxication it takes possession of the brain. Among the blessings promised to Esau, Genesis 27:28, mention is made of plenty of corn and tirosh. Palestine is called a land of corn and tirosh, corn and wine, no grain and fruit. Then he too uses the only reference where tirosh may be negative as evidence. I don't understand. I don't understand. Other than they have accepted the information, it's so plain, no use studying this thing, it's so obvious. But let us say for a moment that tirosh means that which takes possession of the brain by intoxication. And in our passage, Isaac has said to Jacob, may God bless you with plenty of that stuff. Can you put that together? Here's an intoxicating drink. May God give you lots of it. Now we have a problem. But the word tirosh does not necessarily mean to take possession. Some say it means a possession, and that makes a huge difference. McClintock and Strong say that neither explanation is fully satisfying. The facts are, we really don't know the meaning of the word itself at all. Now it is worth noting that this word is always, tirosh, used in a good sense, except for one possible reference, which is Hosea 4:11. So if you want to turn to that, the only reference, Hosea 4:11. Now you see, in doing these messages, I have to give this kind of evidence for those who will check out the research that I have done. Hosea 4:11. Harlotry, wine, and new wine enslave the heart. There you have Yayin and Tirosh in the same verse, and it does sound like a negative verse. So in that passage, it speaks of the things that take away the heart. William Patton thinks that in this reference, tirosh may refer to luxury, and the danger of too much luxury is that it takes away the heart. If this is correct, and all other occurrences would argue that it is, then tirosh, like money, is fine, but money takes away the heart, doesn't it? I don't mean there's something wrong with money. So let me give you the definition I have come to on this word. Tirosh refers to fruit in general. That's what it refers to. By the way, Hosea chapter 4, verse 7. Look at verse 7 to give some evidence for what Patton has said. The more they increased, the more they sinned against me. You see that? Riches. The more they increased. Speaking of luxury and so on. So, my definition is that tirosh refers to fruit in general. It may refer to the fruit itself or freshly expressed juice from the fruit. In my view, it is a general word or a broad term, not a specific and narrow term. And I want us to go to an example passage, Deuteronomy 11:14. Deuteronomy. Now, I told you these two messages would be hard work, but they must be done. Let me read verses 13 through 14 in Deuteronomy 11. And it shall be that if you earnestly obey my commandments, which I command you today, to love the Lord your God and serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, then I will give you the rain for your land in its season, the early rain and the latter rain, that you may gather in your grain, your new wine, and your oil. God promises Israel that if they walk with him in obedience, then he will in turn bless them, and they will gather in their grain, their wine, and their oil. I would translate this verse as grain, fruit, and oil. Grain, fruit, and oil. That basically covers all the foods that require rain. If you make it wine, it doesn't cover fruit. Not a broad term. The other two terms are broad. This one's narrow. Doesn't work. So I believe that the word translated corn, dagon, means grain, and is so translated in the New King James Version. It is a broad term covering that which we call corn and wheat and barley, etc. The word translated wine is the word tirosh. It is not the usual word for wine, and I believe it is a general word which should be translated fruit in this passage. The third item is oil, and that is a general term. Although most oils in that day were made of olives, they made many other kinds of oils as well. The other next word we want to look at is the word yayin. And this is usually translated wine. So back to Deuteronomy chapter 14. And in Deuteronomy 14:23, we have wine, which is tirosh. And in 14:26, it says, "And you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires." See, if it was too far to go from where they were to Jerusalem to take their fruit with them, they were supposed to sell their fruit, tirosh, turn it into money, and then buy, look at verse 26, what they were to buy. "You shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen or sheep, for wine or similar drink, for whatever your heart desires. You shall eat there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household." So they were to take this tithe to the place which God would choose, and that would be Jerusalem. And they would take the tithe of their first fruits to Jerusalem and eat and drink from it there. Then in verse 24, we read that if it was too far to take this tithe to Jerusalem, they were to sell it and buy whatever they wished to eat and so on, as we just read. And in verse 26, we find that one of the things they might buy is wine, yayin. The word occurs 140 times. And the King James Version has translated it wine 137 times, vine once, banquetings once, and wine bibbers once. So what is yayin? Here is my simple definition. Yayin is the juice which comes from grapes. Yayin is the juice that comes from grapes. That's worth jotting down. Whether fresh, preserved, or fermented, it's all yayin, all wine. Fresh, preserved, or fermented. Fresh juice, wine, fermented juice, wine, preserved juice, wine. It's all wine. Always translated yayin. So let's go to the first use. You know, whether this word means an intoxicating drink or just a juice has to be determined from the context. Can't be determined by the wine. We say wine is always fermented. No, it isn't. I gave you proof already that that is not the case. Let me take you to the passage we've looked at before, Genesis 9. And next time we will learn something else very important in Genesis 9. But let me read verse 21. Genesis 9 and verse 21. Verse 20. "And Noah began to be a farmer, and he planted a vineyard. Then he drank of the wine and was drunk and became uncovered in his tent." Next time we will look at another very important word there. But you can tell from the context that this was fermented wine. Isn't that right? The context tells us it was fermented wine. There's no arguing about that whatsoever. Turn with me to Genesis chapter 40. Genesis chapter 40. You will remember the story of how Joseph is put in prison for supposedly having an affair with Potiphar's wife, and a butler and baker were also put in prison, and both dreamed dreams, and they were both sad because they had both had a significant dream, but they did not know what the dreams meant. And at Joseph's invitation, they told him what they had dreamed, and the butler said, look at verses 9 through 11. "Then the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, 'Behold, in my dream a vine was before me, and in the vine were three branches. It was as though it budded, its blossoms shot forth, and its clusters brought forth ripe grapes. Then Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand.'" Now, just what is a butler? Well, he was more properly called the cupbearer. You will remember that Nehemiah was a cupbearer, and I understand that it was a cupbearer's task to see to it that the one he served was served well and that no one would ever put poison in the cup. You know how they did it? Here's how they had wine. Here comes the grapes. Here come the grapes. Here's Pharaoh. And he watches this guy squeeze the juice out of the grapes. No poison in there. You let it ferment. You got poison. We heard that last message, right? You got poison. No poison there. And then he would strain the pulp out of this and give Pharaoh to drink. And he knew what he was drinking was safe. You know, that's the cupbearer's task. When they had cupbearers where they would serve other things, the cupbearer would have to drink first. And if he was okay, then the Pharaoh would drink. So that is the cupbearer's task. And many commentators feel that the butler and baker had been accused of trying to poison Pharaoh and that they were in prison for this reason. But I want you to notice verse 11, how the cupbearer served the grape juice. Verse 11, then Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. In this way, no doubt, Pharaoh was certain that the juice was not poisoned. Now what this text does not do, it does not call the grape juice wine. But there is much evidence that fresh grape juice was called wine. Let me read to you from the writings of Josephus. He was a Jewish historian who wrote at the time of Jesus. Here's what he writes on this account. He therefore said that in his sleep he saw three clusters of grapes hanging upon three branches of a vine, large already and ripe for gathering, and that he squeezed them into a cup which the king held in his hand. And when he had strained the wine, Josephus, 2,000 years ago, he said the juice was wine. He gave it to the king to drink, and he received it from him with a pleasant countenance. You know it wasn't fermented. He squeezed it into his cup. Josephus later writes what Joseph said to the cupbearer. For he, I'm quoting Joseph, Let him know that God bestows the fruit of the vine upon men for good, which wine, calling it wine, is poured out to him and is the pledge of fidelity and mutual confidence among men and puts an end to their quarrels, takes away passion and grief out of the minds of them that use it and makes them cheerful. This is the fresh stuff. This is the must. Josephus then says this, thou sayest that thou didst squeeze this wine from three clusters. You squeezed the wine out of it. That's juice. Grape juice. I could give you lots of evidence if you want to search for it. Now there are some very noteworthy insights to be gleaned from what Josephus writes, and we will look at more of that later. Let us note here particularly that in the cupbearer's dreams he saw three clusters of grapes hanging and ripe and ready to be picked, so he picked them and squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and Josephus says of this juice when he had strained the wine. That's what it is, it's wine. Beyond all question, Josephus, without any hesitation, calls fresh grape juice wine. You know what creates some of the Scanlon problem? Just like the dictionary, wine always means fermented drink. No, it doesn't. It may in our day. It didn't back there. Adam Clark's commentary on Genesis 49:11, a verse we're going to look at more yet, says, from this we find that wine anciently was the mere express juice of the grape without fermentation. The sake, that's the cupbearer, took the bunch, pressed the juice into the cup, and instantly delivered it into the hands of the master. This was anciently the yayin. This was anciently the yayin, the wine of the Hebrews. The oinon, oinon is the Greek word for wine, of the Greeks. And the mustum, Latin for wine. Mustum. Now let me come back to a statement I made when I spoke of the various views of alcohol. I gave this quote from McClintock and Strong. We propose here to treat it in the light of scripture, history, and morals, unbiased by the disputes into which learned and good men have allowed themselves to fall upon the subject. In most of the passages in the Bible where yayin is used, 83 out of 138 times, it certainly means fermented grape juice. I would challenge anybody in this congregation. You take Strong's Concordance. You find every place where yayin is used, and you check out to see if this statement is correct. These are very learned men. 83 out of 138. It certainly means fermented grape juice, and in the remainder, it may fairly be presumed to do so. That's a Scanlon error. In four only, Isaiah 16:10, and then they give a reference that has an error, and then Lamentations 2:12, is it really doubtful? In no passage can it be positively shown to have any other meaning. These are big time scholars. This is how we got the scandal and error. I printed out a list of everyone. My wife and I drive. Sometimes I go over these lists of words. I check list pages of words. I check the words to see what is the possibility. I went through all the references. By the way, I went through all the references of every one of these words. And in by far the vast majority of references, the text does not indicate one way or another whether it was fermented or not. And this is what they say. The facts are that the quote which claimed to be unbiased is full of bias. So in conclusion to this point, what is yayin, or wine in the Old Testament? It is the fruit of the vine, whether fresh or fermented. What the meaning of the word is in any given context must be determined from the context, and when that is not possible, then from the general view gained from the rest of the Bible. So let's bring this message to a close. In Deuteronomy 14:23, the instruction to the Jews is that they are to give a tithe of their grain, broad term, and of their fruit, broad term, and of their oil, broad term, of their herds, broad term, for cattle and oxen, and of their flocks, broad term, for sheep and goats. All broad terms, not one narrow term in the midst of the other broad ones. In the Deuteronomy passage, we have two entirely different words, and both have been translated wine, and I say this is a very clear error. I agree that many words have areas of the same meaning. You know what we call them? When you went to school, what did you call words that have areas of the same meaning? Synonyms. Thank you. Synonyms. Do they mean exactly the same thing? No, they have an area of similarity. If they do not have an area of dissimilarity, they are no longer synonyms. The first word translated wine we looked at was tirosh. Tirosh is, in my view, a broad term for all kinds of fruits, such as plums, pomegranates, grapes, apples, etc. The second word was yayin. Yayin is grape juice. It is clearly linked to the vine and means wine, whether fermented or otherwise. So this brings us to the most crucial word of these three. That is shekar. And the verb shakar. These are verb and noun of the same root. And we're going to look at these two words. And I trust they will help to settle a lot of the reason why we have this error in the church and in Judaism that alcoholic drink is okayed by God. So may the Lord bless as we look into that word next time.